The Thing in the Hall by E.F. Benson, narrated by Trevor O'Hare. The following pages are the account given me by Dr. Asherton of The Thing in the Hall. I took notes, as copious as my quickness of hand allowed me, from his dictation, and subsequently read to him this narrative in its transcribed and connected form. This was on the day before his death, which indeed probably occurred within an hour after I had left him, and, as readers of inquests and such atrocious literature may remember, I had to give evidence before the coroner's jury. Only a week before, Dr. Ashton had to give similar evidence, but as a medical expert, with regard to the death of his friend Lewis Fielder, which occurred in a manner identical with his own. As a specialist, he said he believed that his friend had committed suicide while of unsound mind, and the verdict was brought in accordingly. But in the inquest held over Dr. Asherton's body, though the verdict eventually returned was the same, there was more room for doubt. For I was bound to state that only shortly before his death, I read what follows to him, that he corrected me with extreme precision on a few points of detail, that he seemed perfectly himself, and that at the end he used these words: "I am quite certain as a brain specialist that I am completely sane, and that these things happen not merely in my imagination, but in the external world. If I had to give evidence against about poor Lewis, I should be compelled to take a different line. Please put that down at the end of your account, or at the beginning, if it arranges itself better so. There will be a few words I must add at the end of this story, and a few words of explanation must precede it. Briefly, they are these. Francis Asherton and Lewis Fielder were up at Cambridge together, and there formed the friendship that lasted nearly till their death. In general attributes, no two men could have been less alike, for while Dr. Asherton had become, at the age of 35, the first and final authority on his subject, which was the functions and diseases of the brain, Lewis Fielder at the same age was still on the threshold of achievement. Asherton, apparently without any brilliance at all, had by careful and incessant work arrived at the top of his profession, while Fielder, brilliant at school, brilliant at college, and brilliant ever afterwards, had never done anything. He was too eager, so it seemed to his friends, to set about the dreary work of patient investigation and logical deductions. He was forever guessing and prying, and striking out luminous ideas, which he left burning, so to speak, to illumine the work of others. But at bottom, the two men had this compelling interest in common, namely, an insatiable curiosity after the unknown, perhaps the most potent bond vet devised between the solitary units that make up the race of man. Both, till the end, were absolutely fearless, and Dr. Asherton would sit by the bedside of the man stricken with bubonic plague to note the gradual surge of the tide of disease to the reasoning faculty with the same absorption as Fielder would study X-rays 1 week, flying machines the next, and spiritualism the third. The rest of the story, I think, explains itself, or does not quite do so. This, anyhow, is what I read to Dr. Asherton, being the connected narrative of what he had himself told me. It is he, of course, who speaks. After I returned from Paris, where I had studied under Charcot, I set up practice at home. The general doctrine of hypnotism, suggestion, and cure by such means had been accepted even in London by this time, and, owing to a few papers I'd written on the subject, together with my foreign diplomas, I found that I was a busy man almost as soon as I had arrived in town. Lewis Fielder had his ideas about how I should make my debut, for he had ideas on every subject, and all of them original, and entreated me to come and live, not in the stronghold of doctors, Chloroform Square as he called it, but down in Chelsea, where there was a house vacant next his own. "Who cares where a doctor lives," he said, "so long as he cures people? Besides, you don't believe in old methods, why believe in old localities? Oh, there is an atmosphere of painless death in Chloroform Square. Come and make people live instead. And on most evenings I shall have so much to tell you, I can't drop in across half London. Now, if you've been abroad for 5 years, it is a great deal to know that you have any intimate friend at all still left in the metropolis, and, as Lewis said, to have that intimate friend next door is an excellent reason for going next door. Above all, I remembered from Cambridge days what Lewis dropping in meant. Towards bedtime, when work was over, there would come a rapid step on the landing, and for an hour or 2 hours he would gush with ideas,